Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert for the next hour as we tick down the days until Canada United States on Thursday. We're going to go through that with Jason Buchla in about 10 minutes. We have a Where in the world is Quinn Hughes? You know that show, Carmen San Diego? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. We've connected.
I didn't think you'd remember.
I remember briefly, like a small period of my life playing that video game or a computer game, I think it was. So anyway, we're trying to find out where Quinn Hughes is. Apparently, he's in Vancouver and not on way to Boston.
That's quite the twist.
It is a twist. We'll keep you updated. It's giving Shohei Ohtani plane tracker vibes too early because we have lots of Vlad news to talk about.
Less stakes, it feels like, at least with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
And the tracking of Quinn Hughes. But yeah, this day, in a lot of ways, at least in the city and in Canada, is about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the fact that they didn't come to an agreement, they being Vlad and the Toronto Blue Jays. And it was, I don't really know what I was expecting. Like, it felt like a 50-50 proposition. I think we tried to line it yesterday, and it was like
plus 120.
It was, yeah, I think I had plus odds that it would happen. But
I lost a lot of money, though,
I don't think
the way I feel today.
Yeah, I don't think I was fully, like, prepared for the response, the conclusions drawn, because it does feel, in a lot of ways, the way people are talking, that it's over. That, you know, this was this arbitrary deadline, but it's a deadline nonetheless, and there's something, like, really final. There's finality brought to the situation. I'm hoping that's not the case, but that's what it feels like. And it puts the Blue Jays in an even more tenuous position than they were already in. And yeah, it's an opportunity to not just reflect on what happened the last weekend, what happened in the 11th hour of these negotiations, but the entire Vladimir Guerrero Jr. era, which basically came on the heels of the most exciting era in, at least in my lifetime, watching the Toronto Blue Jays. So it's been, and since that moment, an utter failure. And this is kind of the cherry on top of a Sunday that no one wants to dig into.
You know, it was funny last night after we got off the air, we talked to Shai Davidi, and as you mentioned, we were trying to figure out how close this was to becoming a positive day and a positive story and not one of the, I don't want to use the darkest days in Blue Jays history, but we're getting a lot of reflection, you know, all the headlines and the articles saying that this is a defining day in Blue Jays history. And I have like a jersey bin at home full of lots of jerseys. And I pulled out my Vladdy jersey because I thought, well, maybe I'll bring it into the studio tomorrow. It's not here. And I remember buying that Vladdy jersey the day that Vlad got called up. I was working downtown and they announced that Vladdy was going to be making his MLB major league debut. And I was one of the first, this is actually kind of embarrassing. No, not really. I was one of the first people to buy a Vladdy jersey that day. I got to the Jays shop. I bought the jersey. I remember I didn't work for Sportsnet at the time. And you know how they do the intro videos before the Blue Jays Central? They had me on the screen buying the Vladdy jersey. And then here we are, full circle. I work here. But I remember being so full of like excitement and anticipation and hopefulness that this is a guy. And the reason I never really bought jerseys back then, so I was a student.
Now it's broke. Kind of an addiction.
But I was like, well, I'm going to have this forever. Like, Vlad's going to be a Blue Jay forever. I got to get one of the first 27 jerseys of Vlad because I was also number 27. So there's a lot of connections. And now I looked at it thinking like, man, this might be the only year I have to wear this because then he might play for the Red Sox, might play for the Yankees. But it was such an excited feeling being there when he got called up to bat for the first time. I was in good seats. We saw him. Like, the crowd went crazy. It was Vladdy's first moment as a Blue Jay. And now, today, I obviously didn't bring the jersey in because it's a sad day, because it really, to me, feels, and maybe this is, you know, in the moment reaction, that this is his last season as a Blue Jay. And then why would you not, if you're Vladdy, see this as an opportunity to go to free agency? Look what Juan Soto got. Look at all the money that's thrown around in free agency. Look how many few talents like Vladdy are going to come to the market. It just feels like they missed so many opportunities to solidify Vladdy being a guy that wants to play for this franchise forever, says it, feels it, believes it, has the Canadian connection, is a talent that you can market behind, that you can really build behind. And it feels like that opportunity has, the door has closed. Even though they're saying the door is slightly open, I don't really feel it. Like, why would he come crawling back and be like, oh, actually, I'll take your offer. He's going to go get more.
Okay, so it sounds like a lot of your frustration is directed at the powers that be and those running the Blue Jays. But do you have any ill feelings towards Vlad in this situation at all?
I will answer it with one caveat. I don't know what Vlad wants. If Vlad is going into these negotiations wanting $900 million, then yeah, I got a little reservation with Vlad. I'd be like, that's a bit much. My feeling is always, and maybe this was because I was an athlete and, you know, you always want the, hey, go get that money, go get that bag, whatever. If he said and he gave them months and months and months to meet his demands, which we don't know what the demands are, and he's going to abide by what he believes is his market value and he believes that this is what he deserves, then I don't really have many hard feelings towards Vlad. I think he's been very fair. He's played all the games that you could have imagined him playing. He's been healthy. He's represented this country with pride. He's been a great Blue Jay. And if he says a number that one day we'll find out is within reach and it was $500 million and that was the sticking point, then I don't have the ill feelings towards Vlad. But that's a caveat, is I don't know how much money he's asking for.
Yeah, I think you know, there's multiple opportunities along the way. If you really wanted to get it done, if you really wanted to firm up the future with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., probably could have happened at multiple stages throughout his tenure. But at least in the very specific window of today or the last 3 days, 4 days, whatever you want to call it, like, it's pretty clear that Vlad's in a far more advantageous situation. He is the guy who can create the arbitrary deadline. He's the guy who can ask and is free to ask for the sun and the moon and the stars and everything. And we still don't even know what the ask, but it could be everything. It could be the world he's asking for. And he's also the guy who can just stoke public perception and say the things that you said and repeated and be like, yeah, I want to be here. I want to be here. And it's those people who are not letting me stay here. And I get that he's not saying that directly, but that's like the message that's conveyed. And that's what gets everyone riled up about the situation. And on the flip side of that, and again, I'm not defending Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro at all, but in this situation, the last 4 days, this window, they're the guys with no leverage. They're the guys who have to report to their bosses, which is Rogers, who are actually the people that are going to cut the check to Vlad. Like, they have to play middleman and they have to basically duck shrapnel because they weren't able to get a deal done. It's all about damage control when really it's like you're caught in the middle trying to figure out how you're going to get this done when there's a world where it just can't get done because both sides at the very high level or the decision-making level are not going to allow it. They being Vlad and what he wants and Rogers and ownership and everything that goes into that. Like, I just can't see, like, Ross Atkins takes so much heat today. I don't think Ross Atkins had anything to do with this. Like, it's above his head. It's at least Mark Shapiro. And it's the people that
Mark Shapiro said he was really disappointed. Like, I forget his exact wording.
And who's he disappointed with?
Like, sounded like himself.
The way that this
played out.
It's possible that they're just existing in two worlds. Like, part of the evaluation clearly is Shapiro and Ross. And that's probably why it didn't get done to this point. But I do think everyone who spoke today wants it to happen. I just think it's in a position where, yeah, they have valuations. They have to stick somewhat to it. And at the end of the day, everyone wants more, but not more is not offered to every single person. And I do think Vlad sort of sees that, yeah, I can ask for this and I can still get it at the end of the line, but I can also see in 9 months if there's anything better out there. And ultimately, the biggest failure of the Ross and Mark era is the fact that the team is in shambles right now. And if you're Vlad, and it's about money, yes, but it's also about winning, which he said he wants to win a World Series for his dad. If I'm Vlad, I'm looking around being like, okay, I'm going to ask for everything because maybe I'll take it. But at the end of the day, like, I could probably get both. I could probably get a better opportunity to win and a whole lot of money if I just wait 9 months. So we don't know exactly what happened. We don't know who's at fault, I guess, for not getting this deal done. But I think there's a possibility where there's just a world where this didn't work because two sides are too far apart. And the baseball team, frankly, isn't that good.
We still need to figure out what the word close means as well. How close were you really? We're going to put a pin in this, and there's lots more to go through with the Vladdy situation, how this impacts the season. Can you trade him? Should you trade him now? Should you try to field offers? If you're not going to sign him, what can you get for him? How we're going to be consuming Vladdy's season, if we're cheering for him, if we're feeling a little bit conflicted because you don't want him to go off and make money elsewhere, but you want this team to win. There's a lot of layers to all of this, specifically where to put blame. Caleb Joseph will join us at 6:30. We'll go through all of that. With him, he was a player, how this would impact the clubhouse, how this would impact your season. There's a couple other players that are in similar situations, contract years. Like, this isn't just a Vlad issue. So we'll go through all that with Caleb around 6:30. And so we'll just pause our Blue Jays discussion because we want to shift over to hockey. Obviously, this is a big week. We got a couple days to tee up what is going to be probably one of the, I hope, hopeful best games that we get to watch as hockey fans. Let's bring in Jason Bukla, sports and hockey analyst and former NHL director of scouting. Books, how's it going, buddy? How are you consuming Four Nations?
Love it. I love it. It's been great. It's punched way above its playing weight, if you will. Saturday was awesome. I'm like you, Ailish, though. Like, played sports, been in sports my whole life. And when you bring me on after that Vladdy conversation, I'm just so tempted.
Okay, what do you want to say? This is your platform.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Welcome.
For a second. Thank you. It's got to be president up to ownership more than the GM. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just pro sports, don't you guys think? Like, that's got to be the food chain. And this amount of money the baseball guys are getting, you're absolutely right. You just ended it that the Jays aren't really that great yet. They're trying to be good, but that's a lot of money to invest in a player when your team is, let's be honest, kind of mediocre, right? So anyways, I wish they would have got it done. I hope they get something done because I love baseball in the summer. I'm a huge Blue Jays fan, but geez, the money getting thrown around is astronomical.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyone that's having children should just put them in baseball. Get out of hockey. Unless you're a goaltender.
Left-handed pitching, is that still the most valuable trait?
Or a goalie for Canada.
Yes. Listen, I'll, before we start talking hockey, I'll tell you this. My oldest boy won a baseball scholarship to the States. Mm-hmm. A kid on his team was 6'6", right-handed pitcher from Oakville. They both went to the same school south of the border. My son was a shortstop, second baseman, 5'10", built like a fire hydrant kind of guy. And he got 50%. And let's just say that the pitcher probably got 100%+ of a ride. 100+, so you're absolutely right, Justin. Yes, yes.
Good. They can work on an NIL deal together potentially, though, and maybe carve into some of that profit for the 6'6", did you say, pitcher?
6'6", yeah. Okay. 6'6", 230 or so, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that'll...
Anyways, let's talk Four Nations.
Let's do it. You said, you know, Saturday was a great time for you. I wonder, like, I think it elicited emotion out of pretty much anyone who cares about hockey.
Especially Elliot Friedman.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in preparation for it, too. But, like, how did it feel? Like, how did you feel as a hockey lifer watching something so special unfold on Saturday night?
Okay, so, like, I'm a bullpen guy, right? So I'm not down in the rink live. I'm over here watching it and having to write about it for .ca and doing my scouting stuff on video. I was alone on the couch because that's just the way I like to scout games. I don't want to be disturbed. And I wasn't on the couch very long. It was awesome. I was extremely excited. I mean, the only thing that could have made it better is if Friedge was dressed as Ron Burgundy that night. You know what the term is, whoever. But no, it was great. I think Cooper put it best that it was a bunch of kind of bent up energy that's been collecting for several years for the best on best. Now, I'm curious to see where it goes on Thursday. I'm not expecting that same sort of start to the game. I don't think we'll ever get a start to a game like that again in history, possibly. But there's injuries involved now. There's a lot of moving parts, and it's going to be curious to see. The one thing I will say, though, is that it is interesting how Canada's roster has evolved throughout the tournament here. You know, Bennett sits out game one, Konecny plays, obviously. You know, some things got changed around the other night and then again for Monday night. But the way that they shuffled the deck, it just goes to show still, because you and the three of us will start talking about it as we get closer to trade deadline. There's still that need for that heavy, hard type of lineup. Those people that can complement the speed guys, the skill guys, but also those guys that are going to take an extra bump to extend a play or at least be in the back of the mind of the opponent when you're F1 on the forecheck and you might get run over as a defenseman. So I like the way the lineup looked the other night for Team Canada. Obviously, I'm a homer. I'm wearing the flag. But this is going to be a hell of a hockey game on Thursday night, I believe.
Yeah, I can't wait. We got the numbers, 10.1 million viewers just for that game alone throughout North America, which, I mean, we're feeling good about that here. But I wonder, like, because, you know, you mentioned you got friends that have other sports, other interests, other media members. Like, this to me felt like it was transcending just my regular circle of hockey fans. You saw it online kind of poking through what the NBA All-Star Weekend happened to be going on, and people that are NBA journalists are starting to tweet about, wow, you got to be watching this Four Nations face-off game. Like, this is why I think this tournament is so great and why it's at a great time is because we're a year away from the Olympics, and I think everybody will be watching Thursday night, whether you were a casual fan or maybe you just, you know, oh, I like this one player on this one team. I feel like that put hockey, USA, Canada, that rivalry on the map, at least in the men's side, more than it really ever did. It just felt like it blew the doors open, and Thursday will have way more eyeballs, way more people chiming in, and you know, the political side apart. I just feel like it made this a big moment for those players to kind of grab the narrative and be the stars in the sporting landscape for the first time in a really long time.
Yeah, I totally agree. So from where I sit as an executive, even like the last 3 weeks has been full of good news. If you really think about it, the cap is going up astronomically, exponentially, and the game is in a good place. I think we'd all agree with that. I'm hoping the CBA negotiation goes well, and how can't it with the rise in the cap? And then we're coming out of the momentum of a tournament like this. This is the exact reason why. Forget about the fluff of the All-Star game. Yeah, it's great for, you know, Taylor Swift comes to town every 4 or 5 years in Toronto, maybe, and the local hotels fill up and the restaurants are busy. I get it. But that's what the All-Star weekend is, isn't it, guys? Like, it's just kind of one of those, it's a fun thing, but it's not a need. And this year, I'm hoping every other year that we're able, or at least every other year that we're able to have something like this. And I think you can start to make it evolve too. You know, maybe the Germans, and maybe depending on, you know, the lay of the land in the world, things might change a little bit too, right? I'm hoping for that. I mean, you can always be hopeful that we can get the top of Mount Everest with the total best on best. But listen, people are staying up late in Finland. People are staying up late in Sweden. In North America, you just spit out the numbers there. Fantastic numbers. We as a sport captured the attention of a lot of periphery people in the last week. It's great for the game. It's good for the star power of the game as well. I would suggest to you guys that people who didn't really know, you know, who even Sam Bennett was, or the Tkachuks. Let's just talk about the Tkachuks. Yeah. I heard somebody say yesterday, I don't know if they have a podcast or not, but if they were to start one this week, I mean, it wouldn't be the Kelce brothers, but you get.
We were talking about that. Were you listening to our show?
Was that you guys?
Maybe it was our show.
I was listening on the radio.
I did say that. I said they could maybe be, I don't know, the Kelce brothers are dating Taylor Swift, so it's a different story, but like they can be the brothers, the guys that have like the inside look of what it's like to be a pro athlete. Like, I think they have risen their stardom like exponentially.
Yeah.
100%. And, you know, you get Big Walt on there telling stories. Yeah. And it would just go
off the rails. Something the Kelces don't have is the former dad who was fighting in the same. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. So anyways, I'm excited like you guys. I think you can hear it in my voice. I think it's been fantastic for the game. And from a trickle-down effect, again, I'll use that, the economics are going to be better because of this. You're going to sell more merch. You're going to get more eyes on TV. Hopefully, it's going to track right out to playoffs. And we're really going to start to, you know, get more households, not only in North America, but I know the league is trying to grow the game globally, and this was good for everybody.
Yeah, I was just going to make that point on the theme of it being good for everybody. Like, even if you look at Finland and Sweden, they're not going to be playing in the final, clearly. But Finland gets a win over Sweden. It's great. It's forever rival. Sweden doesn't lose once in regulation, beats the United States, has three pretty good games, and apparently they were all sick the entire time. Like, everyone, aside, I think, from the loser Thursday night, is going to feel pretty good about how their tournament went. And yeah, I don't think it's a waste of time for anyone based on that and based on the fact that clearly hockey's made some growth in this moment. But specifically with Canada and the U.S., Spooks, like a lot of people have been talking about a potential role reversal here with the U.S. doing the things that Canada did so well. You obviously have a keen eye on what's going on at every level of hockey and the development of this game. Do you see what a lot of people are seeing with the U.S. becoming Canada in a lot of ways, and Canada doing things a little bit different now than they did previously?
100%. I mean, think back to the World Juniors, the U18. Like, honestly, guys, this has been building for years. I mean, years, like a generation, to be honest. And the U17 program, the U18 program, I think on this USA team, if I'm not mistaken, there's at least 12 or 14 of those players that have crossed paths at the U.S. National Team Development Program as U-17 and U-18s. I could be off by a player or two, but it's in the ballpark, okay? So they've been building this type of momentum for several years, and they've got a mix of skill and will. They've got guys that are, you know, a dog on a bone. They've got guys that are going to play fast, and they can play the game a variety of ways. Their goaltending is off the charts. Let's be honest. Ottinger could have started probably for any team in this tournament, Hellebuck, and they've got more on the horizon. So the U.S. is going to be a tough out for several years to come. And we have to make some changes. There's been some announcements lately at Hockey Canada levels about, you know, the World Juniors and stuff. And I don't want to go off on a political rant here, but we're chasing it a bit right now. So let's really gobble up the next couple of years as much as we possibly can, because it's going to be tough sledding for a bit here.
Chatting with Jason Bukala about a lot of things, including Vladdy, but mostly about this big game on Thursday. So let's look at like the gameplay for Canada, because you mentioned it, their line changes for Finland. Actually, I think it made a big difference, just like opening up a bit more space. And I don't want to pinpoint any specific players that
pinpoint away.
Well, I think
how about it? How about
okay. Well, I think that McDavid looked a little bit more free without having Marner on his line. I think they have similar
and Reinhardt,
and I think they have similar like mental play styles. Like, we're going to do the same kind of thing. I mean, McDavid's on another level. Would you do anything different? Would you tweak anything going into Thursday? Is it set up for success? And we are tracking Quinn Hughes' plane. He's in Vancouver. He might not be coming. So looking at the health of having Makar back.
There may be no plane.
There might not be a plane, but I got the tracker on it. Like, how does Canada win on Thursday besides having some of the clutchest Canadian athletes that we've ever seen?
Well, first of all, the lineup has to stay exactly the same. You put it perfectly, both of you guys. Like, having Reinhardt and Marner on that line with McDavid, he's a burner. We know that. Nobody skates faster than him. Braden Point's not too far off, though. And the thing with him is that when pucks spill to the perimeter, Point doesn't have to handle it all the time. You know, like Marner, he wants to have it. He wants to make plays from the perimeter. He wants to hold the puck. And that doesn't necessarily work with guys like McDavid. Guys who have that go get it, move it to him, and then move quickly to open space. They might get it back, or they might get a puck net front. I know the drop pass was to Sanheim, but it's off the rush and Point's there, right? He's at the crease. He's making that play. You don't change anything, guys. You've got some, you got a nice structure there in the middle of the lineup with some growl. And then, you know, even at the bottom of the lineup, again, you've got guys that are playing to their strengths. So you start going through it. The Hagels, listen, Marner, before I go off here, Mitch Marner scored a great goal, overtime winner against Sweden. Things could be totally different in this tournament if that puck doesn't go on the net. Who knows, right? So that's the good news. People are going to beat him up about the offense, and I'm going to be one of them, because when you're going to be paid that kind of dough in the offseason and yada, yada, Toronto in the playoffs, he's going to need to score. But I'm of the frame of mind, he's been really good defensively. Like, I have liked his effort. I think that he's been in a good spot. I think when they've had to kill penalties, he's done some things well. And that's good for Team Canada. That's my point. So don't change anything. Mm-hmm. Have the Hagels and the Sorellis and the Marners doing what they do. Have the Muscle doing what they do. And then at the top of the lineup, you guys put it perfect. Let them play free. Mm-hmm. And then I want to end it with this, though. Travis Sanheim entering this lineup, it wasn't a big fall off from Shea Theodore. Mm-hmm. Travis Sanheim, in case anybody, 6'4", 222. Have you guys noticed how he tracks up and down the ice? He's quick to space and he gets after it. So that's a good news story in itself there, because Drew Doughty's in survival mode. God bless him, but he's in survival mode out there right now. It is what it is.
Don't say that Fuchs will come after you.
Yeah.
He's been coming after me for 25 years. He still can't catch me going around the block. So let's get out.
There you go. Okay, so nothing changes from a lineup perspective, but I wonder, and it's too early to look at Milan and the Olympics, but these are going to be two different styles of play. And I wonder, do you make changes? What have you learned from this, the roster that they've put together, the changes that have been needed to be made? The idea that things are going to be a little bit different at the Olympics. The Olympics are more important. Like, I think I have one general takeaway, and it might be that you have to cater to Connor McDavid and make sure he hits the ground running immediately on the Olympic stage. And then again, like, there's going to be changes. Like, I don't know if Sam Bennett and what he can bring is going to work necessarily for an Olympic team. Probably too early to worry about the margins of the roster. But have you learned anything about the future in terms of tournament play, and how to best put together a roster based on what you've seen here?
Yeah, so first of all, the left side of the D is probably set. That's my first takeaway. When you start going Theodore, Sanheim, Morrissey, like, that's pretty good. I like
Morrissey's been incredible.
Morrissey, Morrissey's a guy in our circles in the Toronto region that doesn't get enough love. Like this guy, he's sneaky hard to play against. He'll sneak up on you and bite your ankles off. Like he'll gap up and he hits you hard in the neutral zone. And then he can quarterback the power play, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one thing. I think that the back end on the left side is set. Goaltending is not. One thing that's bothered me is just, and I'm not in the war room. I don't hear it. I hear it second, third, fourth hand like everybody else. But if I take it for what I have heard on the Logan Thompson scenario, like, I don't care what a guy's like from October till hopefully June in the National Hockey League. And if he's like, you think Billy Smith for the New York Islanders, I know I'm dating myself, but way back in the day he was probably snarly towards his teammates at different times, always wanted the net. That's how guys are. Logan Thompson was left off this roster for noise, I understand. We can't have that enter the equation next cycle, guys, because Binnington's been so far good enough, hopefully great on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. He's hanging on like Doughty.
He's hanging on. He's hanging on. So that's a good way to put it. So, but up front, I still think that we're going to be looking at, you know, adding some more. I think Jarvis is on the come, see some more. I think you'll see Konechny continue to evolve. But there's going to be some other guys like the Connor Bedards, you know, the Mac and Celebrinis, these types of people that are going to push some guys, some veteran guys for jobs. So we'll see. We got a lot of time to talk about it. But here's the one takeaway, Justin. I got to get this up. When we go overseas for a world event, you know that the international officiating is going to be way different than the foreign nations.
No fighting.
Right? No, you're not going to see what happens. Well, they'll turn the lights off and all hell will break.
There you go.
But it will be different. The international officials, they look at things a little bit different. So you have to kind of be mindful of that when you set your roster.
I kind of love that. I kind of love that we have two different international tournaments, both of which are clearly going to be very, very important. They are played different ways, and that is going to affect the way rosters are put together. I think all of that is extremely good for us that get to talk about it all the time. We got about a minute. I just want to throw this one out at you because, you know, the NHL style has definitely lent itself well to at least the entertainment value with everyone being so into this tournament, despite it being kind of contrived and put together in a way that, you know, the players had to create the meaning for it, and there is meaning. It's very, very important. But with these two different things, World Cup and the Olympics going back and forth, do you see a world in 20 years where the World Cup is more important because of the style of play that is required?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I kind of hope so in a way, because that would mean the game has evolved worldwide to the point that there's that much interest in it and there's that much meaning on more than four or five nations, if you will. So kind of I hope that does happen. The one thing I want to say, and I know you said a minute, that I'll take 10 seconds.
No worries.
What attracts people to what they saw on the weekend, especially south of the border, is the physicality. Let's not ever lose that in our game. It's a track meet. They play fast. People like that, but they don't love it south of the border. I'm not saying we have to go turn back to the 70s. Don't get me wrong. But there's always a room in this game to play rough style hockey and you know, kind of get your opponent on their heels a bit. So I hope we never lose that part of it.
Okay, who wins Thursday?
Oh, Team Canada is going to win. It's going to be an overtime. Bennington's going to let in a muffin somewhere along the line. We're going to rebound. He's going to make a couple of big ones in OT again. And that's what it's going to be.
Who gets the OT winner? Captain Crosby?
Sidney Crosby would be so great. But you know what? It's going to be Nathan McKinnon.
Oh, he's going to good. I got an MVP future on Nathan McKinnon, so that'll cash. Thanks, Books. looking forward to it.
Listen, you two, don't be so strange. Don't be strangers, eh? Dial me up once in a while.
Okay, well, call or tell our producer, David Siss, to not lose your number then, all right? We'll make it happen. Okay. All right. Thanks, Books. Right. Appreciate it.
He's
go Canada.
Charge,
talk soon.
Take care, guys. See you later.
That's Jason Bukala, a sports and hockey analyst, former NHL director of scouting, proud Canadian.
Yeah.
OT would be, I don't think I could breathe. Like, after that first minute of the other game, my Apple Watch, free ads, my fitness watch was like, your heart rate, are you recording a workout? I was like, basically,
really?
I am.
Wow.
Because it was just like, oh my God. Like, yeah. So
I think mine reached its peak 9 seconds in. Not even 9 seconds in. Actually 2 seconds.
It was wild. Okay, quickly, because we don't want to keep Caleb Joseph waiting on the other side of the break. Let's do some best bets. We got some fun ones for you. I have two. One of them is a bit of a lengthy, you'll have to believe in it. It's called Werenski Watch. And our show, The Fan Pregame, has made a team bet on Werenski Watch. Now, this is a parlay.
It's a lottery ticket.
It's Because I've actually liked watching Werenski. So it's kind of like He's a happiness hedge. He's actually amazing. And you know what? I'm going to be a Team Werenski truther for the rest of this season. Werenski to win the Norris and the MVP of the Four Nations Faceoff is 341-1. So it's our lottery ticket. You know, if you want to go on a trip this summer, maybe we'll be banking on the Werenski watch. It's a bit of long odds, but live a little. My next one, a bit more realistic. Vlad over 31.5 home runs. I think he's going to be motivated by this. I hate it, but I love it because I love the guy, but I hate the feeling that we're going to lose him. So Vlad over 31.5 home runs at -115. That's the line last year. He had 30. You don't think he can hit two more because he's mad about the team not wanting to sign him?
Yeah, the only question is, who is he hitting those home runs for? I guess we will find out.
That's true.
Over the course of
the season.
Doesn't
say it has to be as a Blue Jay.
That's true. So either way, we could be
31.5 hours. That's until his next contract in negotiation.
We have another window.
Oh, it's open.
Which is very, very exciting. Okay, I still think the MVP is totally up for grabs in the Four Nations, which is another layer of intrigue for Thursday night. Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Tkachuk are 16 and 17 to 1, respectively. A lot of MVP awards go to the player or players that define the tournament. I think the defining players of the tournament so far are the Tkachuks. If one of them scores a goal, I think one of them can take down this award. I'm going to play both at 16 and 17 to 1. They're both a little banged up, but they're both going to play.
I got lots of those bet too,
and
Justin.
I think they'll be fired up and ready to go. So a couple potential value plays on the MVP of the tournament.
Well, the other thing about Werenski, we should have added, he's like way up there in the points.
Co-leading points
and leading the team in minutes and a sneaky pick, as you mentioned.
And Quinn Hughes isn't going to bump it out of the power play.
And that's right. No Quinn Hughes as of right now. His plane says he's in Vancouver on the ice for the Canucks. So is he going to fly all the way to Boston unless he's playing? Probably not. So he's not currently on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're on to something here.
They weren't able to convince Jake Sanderson that he had the flu, I suppose.
No, they for Jake Sanderson and went on Twitter today. He saw all the ways he was getting injured by his own team. Anywho, we'll take a quick break. Caleb Joseph will join us. We'll go back to the Vladdy well. How do we get here and what does it mean for this season as a Blue Jays fan? That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We had our fun talking to Bukla. Getting giddy for Thursday.
I know he says he wants to watch alone, but I kind of want to watch.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I wouldn't bother him.
No, you probably would. So what are you writing over there, Books?
I don't know if I'd say that.
We got to get serious now, okay?
Yeah, all right.
The fate of our franchise is crumbling in our hands. Let's bring in Caleb Joseph.
That's your opinion.
Caleb, how's it going, man?
Well, it was going optimistic, I'd say, about... 14, 15 hours ago or so?
Yeah. And then what happened?
Yeah, there's a Bob Marley song that talks about, you know, every little thing is going to be all right. So that's kind of what I'm kind of playing this afternoon and hoping that his song rings true.
I hope so too, and it may just be all right in the end.
No,
we may get a deal.
No cry.
We may get a deal at the end of that day, or at least the end of the season. I don't know. We'll see what happens here with Vlad. But like, we know what we know now is that they didn't get a deal done. Like, I don't know if we need to do blame pie right now, but like, as to why it didn't get done, like, where does your mind immediately go, Caleb?
Well, it's apparent that they weren't close. And I think there is a certain position as a player that if everything you've said is true in terms of wanting to go back to the only team that you've ever known, if they get even remotely close and the deal seems somewhat fair, you're just going to end up taking it. And if you're, you know, $25 million apart over maybe a 10 or 13 year deal, you're going to swallow that. If you're $100 million apart or 75 even maybe, that seems to be a big hurdle. And so my initial reaction is they just weren't close because I played with Vladdy in 2020 And I truly believe he wants to be in Toronto. Mm-hmm. He loves Toronto. The city loves him. The nation loves him. And I feel like if they were able to get pretty close, Vladdy would have maybe taken what, when you're talking $400 or $500 million, it doesn't seem like a good word to use, but discount. He might have taken a bit of a hometown discount, you know. And it just was apparent that they weren't close. Reading a lot of the stuff that's come out, it's obvious that ownership and the people making the decisions, they had an evaluation set on him, and they just did not feel very comfortable moving past a certain number. And Vladdy's camp probably has that exact same evaluation. How does this get here? It gets here for a lot of different reasons. And I think Vladdy is such an interesting case study that really has me intrigued. I am so intrigued by him and just this free agency, this situation. It's kind of taken over my mind over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm in on numerous text chains with other people trying to figure out all of the different back and forth. And if Vladdy was as good as he was in 21 and last year for his entire career, I'm not sure we're having a conversation. And I think that's probably one of the bigger holdups, is just the inconsistency of greatness, but the ability to show greatness for not just a 1 month span. So it's just all over the map. And I feel myself thinking they should have done it. I get the fiscal responsibility. I get the risk that the Blue Jays would take. I'm kind of all over the map understanding both sides.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Like, I love the point that you mentioned, like, showing that greatness. We know what he can be. Yeah, maybe there's been some inconsistency, but, I mean, if you look back in 10 years, are those blips? Like, I think so. I think that he will round out to be an amazing baseball player for the next X amount of years, and I think that's why there's a lot of frustration, because you had him, and it now feels like you're going to lose him. So I guess my question is, you know, we heard different perspectives of this door closing, but if you're Vlad, why would you not go to free agency? Why would you not see what Juan Soto got and see the excitement of being, you know, the prized possession in the offseason and probably make more money? Like, does this feel like a done deal for you looking ahead at the rest of the season being maybe the last for Vladdy? Or is there like a small piece of hope for you that his love for the city and the love that he's sharing and outwardly pouring means that he needs to walk back and say, maybe I will take your offer?
I think it leans more towards this is probably the last year Vladdy will be in a Blue Jays uniform, but I do think there is a sliver of hope. And I think a lot of it would have to do with what I mentioned earlier, the evaluation possibly getting a little bit more north and Vladdy maybe coming down a little bit on his. The price can, in my opinion, can really kind of skyrocket this year, especially if he continues to do what he's done in those two great years and proves that, like you were just saying, the other two are a blip. The Blue Jays have so many questions to answer this season, and I firmly believe that this is going to be a kind of a 3 month season, so to speak, in that they are going to have to get off to a great start, or they're going to have to pivot and really figure out what they're going to do. Kind of laying in the gray it just hasn't worked in the last 4 or 5 years, and they have assets that are aging and getting older, and they've got to figure out, you know, are they going to go into a rebuild? You know, the farm system obviously isn't ready for a rebuild, but can you sell off assets now to then pack that up and try and start that process over? And the reason I bring that up is because, do you want a Vladdy on the team at the end of 2025, making whatever $35, $40 million a year over 10, 12, 13 years when you're going into one of those phases? And so there's so many moving parts going right here that it does seem like this could be the end. I will say, if you love the city and you love the town and you love the organization and the people that you get to play baseball with, you won't be disrespected by not being able to reach a deal right now. And so I don't think Vladdy walks away saying, you know, forget these people, I'm never coming back, it doesn't matter, they can offer me whatever. I think Vladdy loves the city. I think he just is standing firm in what he believes he can get on the open market and hopes that maybe the Blue Jays are the first one to offer that, and he can take it and be a Blue Jay for life. I don't think that this really shreds the relationship at all. So there is a sliver of hope, but I would not be surprised one bit if he was in a different uniform, either 26 or the middle of this year. I would not be surprised.
This feels purely financial right now, which I guess is fair because Vladdy has time. But I wonder, you know, it has to be different for different players. And you and Vladdy were obviously different players. But, like, how much are players conscious of just how a front office is performing? Like, I think one of the most interesting things said today was Vladdy wanting to win a World Series for his father, who never won a World Series. And if you're looking around at the team, you're looking around, you know, at everyone who's in the organization today at the start of spring training and realizing it's kind of barren in terms of prospects. There's not much coming up. There's not much support. There was a lot of swing and miss in terms of the offseason, despite actually getting a couple guys this year in Anthony Santander and Jeff Hoffman in particular. But how much of this with Vladdy is like, I don't know if I can get that World Series for Dad here. And I should at least, I owe it to myself to see how this year goes and what is out there next offseason.
Yeah, he's in a position of leverage. And when you're in those positions as a player, you take it, because more times than not throughout a baseball career, you're not in a position of leverage. When you first get to the big leagues, you make the minimum. You have no leverage. You then go into arbitration. You have a little bit of leverage, but still the leverage really weighs heavily on the team side. And then you finally potentially get to test free agency where you feel like you have the leverage in, I want to pick this team in that city and I want to test the market. And kind of being courted is a really cool thing to experience. And yes, totally different levels, Vladdy and I. It was cool to kind of see who was out there and who was interested in my services. Always fun to just hear the names and the teams, and then your mind starts thinking about, man, what it would be like to play in this city or that city, et cetera, et cetera. And so there is a level of sort of excitement that does intrigue, I think, every player, unless the team gives you what you want and you just continue to be happy. And so he's in a position where he had a number and he wasn't going to move off that number, knowing that all that other stuff I just talked about is right around the corner. And now he's super motivated to go have the best year of his career and hit the jackpot, much like all of his friends have in the last few years. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, this could be his best year. And, you know, for the Blue Jays, that number could potentially go north. And it's such an interesting case. I love this because it's really unique in that, you know, think about how many hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts are there for players that aren't like the no-brainers. Yeah. The total no-brainers, the Trout, you know, the Judge, the Ohtani, the Betts, the total no-brainers. And, I, you know, in my mind, Vladdy's a no-brainer. I mean, I've seen what he's done. We have seen what he's done. But when you look at the back of the ball cards, there are those blips. And the other people that I just mentioned, they don't have those. And so it is such he wants to be paid like an elite player because he's shown he is, but he hasn't been elite like those other players have as consistently. Do I think it's in there? Absolutely. Do I believe in him? Absolutely. Would I be tempted to give it to him? Absolutely. I would also be a little bit hesitant, you know, so I totally get it. And normally I said this in a thread earlier, normally I would put on the GM hat, be fully confident in making decisions and stand by them and know that I was doing the right thing. I have pondered this decision back and forth and back and forth, and I have no idea what I would do if I was the GM of the Toronto Blue Jays. I really don't. I just don't think it's that clear cut and dry that just give Vladdy what he wants. But you've got an entire nation that wants him to be signed. He is the face of the franchise. He is the player. How do you not give him what he wants? But then I also see the fiscal responsibility that Ross, Atkins, and Mark Spire are talking about. Like, I get it. There is some risk there just because you're not 100% sure, like a Trout, Judge, Ohtani, et cetera. So this one's been really interesting for me.
I want to ask you about the player perspective. You know, we hear a lot about, oh, it's going to be a distraction, or, oh, it's going to motivate him, or, oh, the guys on the team that are also pending contracts because there's, you know, someone like a Bo Bichette or somebody next year that might be pending contract. And we also hear the idea that maybe free agents won't want to come here now because there's no Vladdy. Like, what about that is real? Like, you've played. You know what it's like to be in the clubhouse. Yeah. You know when a guy, hey, he's the face of our franchise. He didn't get signed here. Am I thinking differently about this team? Am I thinking differently about my future? Like, is there a level of distraction, even small, medium, or large, that other players or Vladdy are going to have to deal with this season, knowing that there's a couple players that don't have contracts and the fate of this franchise, the people in charge are also kind of up in the air?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I do think that it is I think there's probably people around the league that are scratching their head wondering how you couldn't give Vladdy what he wants, knowing how important he is to the city. I also thought it was really interesting. I think Shai Davidi wrote about this, that Blue Jays are maybe one of six teams that have not paid over $150 million for a player. I found that to be really, really interesting. I would not have guessed that. If I'm a huge market guy, I would not trust that I could get that in Toronto. But, you know, Ohtani was heavily sought out by the Toronto Blue Jays. And yeah, I think those numbers were real. Like, did we really anticipate him coming? I don't know. Probably not. I mean, we probably thought he was going to be a Dodger, and he was. But it didn't hinder Anthony Santander from signing. It didn't hinder Max Scherzer from signing. And Max is wanting to win too. Max, at this stage in his career, he's not collecting a paycheck. He wants to win, and he wants to win a World Series, and he thought his best chance to do that was in Toronto. And so I do understand the narrative. I think it's changed quite a bit because of the renovations of Rogers Center, because of what the front office has been able to do with that facility. It is so inviting as a player. All you have to do is show all of these facilities and basically show them to the player and say, hey, we have all of the resources you will ever need. And that's incredibly enticing. Couldn't be said a couple of years ago. I do think the stigma of going to Toronto in some cases is a real deal, but in most now, the players that I talk to, they don't write Toronto off completely. The offers will dictate whether they want to come here or not. And if you want a great player to show up in Toronto, sometimes you have to overpay. Sometimes you have to do it. And so when they're willing to go there, players will take the money. At the end of the day, money talks. I mean, that phrase has been thrown around for years and years and years. At the end of the day, if you outbid somebody, you're going to take that money, especially if it's not $400 or $500 million. I mean, if it's $100 million to $125 million, you're going to take the $125 million and go figure out how to be a great player in Toronto. So it just depends. All scenarios are a little bit different, but I don't think them not extending Vladdy shuts the market off for impending free agents to want to pursue Toronto.
A hard 30 seconds here, Caleb. You know Vladdy. Can he just head down, no distractions, perform with the specter of this now behind him?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a smart move by his representation to give a deadline. You do not want to be thinking about trying to chase anything other than being the best player you can while you're hitting free agency. And this is the time to put your head down and focus. I think he's at an age and experience level that he has figured out how to do his job and do it very well. He's got a great team behind him. I love what Edwin Encarnacion has been able to do with him. This could be a huge year for Vladdy. I love the fact that he has no distractions now. Go out, play, do your best, see what happens.
Okay, another hard 30 seconds. This time I really mean it. Has the Four Nations frenzy caught Nashville? Are you getting fired up for hockey, or what's going on down there, Caleb?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was in the bed watching the USA-Canada game a couple nights ago. I'd already taken a shower. I was so nervous, I had to go take another shower because my armpits were so sweaty.
Yeah, I feel you.
It was awesome. I love this format. I think it is tremendous. They have really, really done a great job. The All-Star game is great. Been able to go to a couple. Really cool. But this is, I am tuning in with bated breath. I cannot wait for this rematch.
All right. Yeah. Thursday night, Caleb. I know you're American, so go Canada. Sorry. We'll have to draw the line there. All right.
You know, hey. Just a great game. Let's see a great game.
I agree. A great game. Well, Caleb, we'll be seeing you around a lot soon. Spring training underway. Great to chat, and take care.
Okay, thank you all.
That's Caleb Joseph of Sportsnet, Jays analyst here. And
I don't know if you need the double shower if you're not cheering for the United States.
Yeah, he was
in that instance. Are you
fired up? Yeah. No, that's awesome. Hey, it's spread to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely
worldwide.
I mean, we got some numbers, obviously.
10.1 mil
in terms of who it's reached, and clearly it's going to be another level for the final, or at least you would expect it to be another level, because I think it caught a lot of people by surprise on Saturday night. I mean, how could it not, based on what we saw in the first couple seconds? I think the sporting world, given the calendar, given the stakes, given the political nonsense, like it is going to be, it is going to be watched.
Oh, yeah.
Put it that way.
And we've got two full days to tee it up. We'll be back on tomorrow at 6 p.m. Go through the day before. And then, of course, Thursday, we're going to have a two-hour show to get you fired up for Four Nations Face-Off Championship Thursday night. Maybe I'll make a new mixtape. Nah, I'm probably
got a lot of play. I mean, there's always a remix to the remix, right?
Yep. See what Friege can provide me this time. All right. That was a fan pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great night. See you tomorrow.